to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 452, to be broadcast Wednesday, August 27th on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's out riding her bike. Hey, good thing, huh? Cool. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment down here below. I may or may not be able to respond back to you. Otherwise, you can send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Welcome to Bicycle Talk. It's a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can just make a comment down here below, or you can send me that email. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. Yeah, another bump in the road, episode 6. Gosh, boy, I've been doing a number of these shows since I had my cervical fusion. Good time. The results are, the pain's definitely improving and the management is improving on it. It's getting a little bit more flexible. I can turn my head side to side a little more. I got great PT people behind me. Shout out to Select Physical Therapy. We're going to figure this thing out. You know, I want to ride my bike again. That's the bottom line here is I need to ride and I need to get back to my life. And I have gotten back to my life. I am back to teaching again. I am back to doing my other job as the Registrar of Voters in town and the Farm to Families program and all. So anyway, I'm back. But I got to say, the end of the day, it gets a little tough, but I made it. I'm going to do it. So if you ever have anything like this done, you certainly are welcome to reach out to me. I can give you some tips, that sort of thing. All right, Ron's Rant of the Week. Let's go. That's not much of a rant. So let's go to, they say out west that there's nothing lower or worse than a horse thief. I don't know, that comes from the old westerns I grew up on. Well, I have to say, it's really, there's nothing lower than a bike thief. So as of this show, and this was just a few hours earlier before when I was putting everything together, it was reported that Team Visma Lisabike said police in Italy are investigating the theft of several bicycles. Wait until I tell you what several is. From an equipment truck, although it was unclear if Jonas Vingegaard will be affected in stage 3 today, on Monday. The quote here is, last night our mechanic's truck was broken into and several bikes were stolen, said the team in a statement. Our mechanics are working hard to ensure the team is fully prepared for the third stage. The police have launched an investigation into the incident. I'm going to cover the depth of this a little bit later in the show. So we're going to move on to a positive side right now. First of all, welcome back, UConn and Eastern students. Yeah, the universities have all come back in our area here. We are in a fairly busy little college town. And then just south of us is Willimantic, which is also a busy little college town too, with Eastern Connecticut State University. And I just want to make a quick shout out to you guys, not only welcoming you back, but remember, your bicycle is a vehicle. Yeah, a lot of kids ride bikes when they come back to school. It's a great way to get around. It is the way to get around. It's faster, it's more convenient, it's easier to go to different places because you don't have to worry about parking a car, all those things. So anyway, bicycles are relatively popular on college campuses. So what I'm going to say, your bike is a vehicle. You need to obey the rules of the road. Treat it like a vehicle. Treat it like you're driving your bicycle, not riding your bicycle. All right? It is legally a vehicle. So you need to treat it that way. And as far as sidewalks are concerned, personally, I don't like bikes on sidewalks. Bikes are for pedestrians, but if you feel you must use them with your bike or your scooter, remember, pedestrian speed only. Very, very simple, you know? If you're going faster than the pedestrian is, then you're going to hurt someone if you hit them with your moving vehicle. And I know you guys are all young, you're all tough, and you can handle it, but one bad head injury will change your life. So please, 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 just pedestrian speed only. If you feel like you need to be on your bike to get somewhere or on your scooter, we have a lot of scooters around here, please be on the roads. The roads are far safer for all of us if you're on them instead of on the sidewalks. So I have a few more tips for you about this whole commuting and getting yourself back on your bike and how to lock your bike up and all that later on in the show. And we'll talk about that. So the Vuelta. Yeah, the Vuelta has started. It started on Saturday. So we had a Saturday race and a Sunday race. Saturday race was a big sprinting race. Sunday finished with a huge steep climb at the very end. It's been exciting. It's been a really, really kind of exciting start. So, you know, as we get into our third Grand Tour of the year. So that's a positive thing. And remember, there's four flat stages in this race. There's six medium mountain stages, five mountain stages, one individual time trial, three hilly stages with high altitude finales, and two rest days. So it began on Saturday on the 23rd, and it goes all the way through till September 14th. And that will finish traditionally in the capital of Spain, Madrid. So we'll talk a little more about that in the show. And I just returned, more positive stuff, from another Farm to Fork Fondo. My friends at the Farm to Fork Fondo reached out to me and said, "Hey, Ron, if you're healthy, we would really love to have you down here doing the announcing for the Farm to Fork Fondo in Pennsylvania. It's the Pennsylvania Dutch Tour." And so I agreed and said, you know, I would take my time driving down, which that's another story. But anyway, I would take my time driving down because of my neck and not knowing how far I could drive before I would have to pull over and take a little rest. But I would certainly be there. So I got to announce the event. It was the most unbelievable August weather I've ever seen in Pennsylvania. Normally in Pennsylvania this time of year, there is a heat factor, a big time heat factor. Main reason why, we're in Lancaster County, and when we're in Lancaster County, you're in farmland and there are no trees. I mean, it is just farmland. A lot of Amish there. It's a really cool place to ride your bike. There's some amazing roads out there. And if you are an old-time bicycle racing fan, it is the land of Floyd Landis. Remember that name? If you don't, then, you know, I guess I'm just showing my age. But if you do, make a comment. Let me know. So anyway, it's Floyd's backyard. That's where he grew up. I heard an awesome Floyd story. I'm gonna share that story. I'll get to that. It's kind of off my plan here, but I will share that in just a minute. The trip down was difficult, not because of my neck as much, but the traffic was just ridiculous. I got a late start, got caught in tons of traffic, and yeah, to what should have been 12 hours of driving back and forth, six down, six back, was more like 16. But anyway, that's what we have to deal with here up in the Northeast. We have too many people in too tight of a space and too much traffic. But anyway, moving on. The town of Mansfield, on the positive side, has added traffic calming medians on busy Route 275. That's also known as South Eagleville Road here in town. It abuts up against the University of Connecticut, so it tends to be very busy. It tends to be ridiculously fast. It's a 35-mile-an-hour road that most people travel about 60 miles an hour on, which is really, really maddening. So the town of Mansfield came to the conclusion the best way to deal with this is to do some traffic calming. Traffic calming means that they put in these medians, which they'll fill with flowers, and, you know, they'll be really pretty when they're done. Right now, they're just kind of construction zone, but they certainly are very effective at the moment. They put these nice calming medians in on 275. So big thumbs up to the town of Mansfield for paying attention to pedestrian and bicycle safety. We like that. That's a good thing. And I'm going to make a little shout out there to Bike Mansfield, the advocacy group in town that's been doing a lot of really, really positive work. So that's a big shout out to Lon Holkren and the crew for all the work they do. After a few frustrating days for Wahoo computer owners, you know who you are. There's a tip of the chapeau to Wahoo because they have some update firmware for their Element 1 and Bolt 1 and 2 or Roam 1 and 2 computer. What was happening was it was very, very, very confused at what day it was. And so you were getting all sorts of weird readings. And Fran, of course, in her infinite amount of patience that she has, went out and bought herself a new computer because she just couldn't live with her computer not working for a day. We won't get started on that. If she was here, we would have a very interesting banter over it. But she's out riding her bike right now, so enjoying her new computer, I do believe. Anyway, fortunately, Wahoo got on it. They got their software engineers on it, and they figured it out. So any of you who are having any trouble with your Wahoo Element computers, it has been fixed. You just go to their site, and they have a firmware download, and you can pretty much take care of the problem yourself, or maybe a phone call to Wahoo to have them walk you through it if you're old and computer illiterate like I am. Well, maybe I'm not that bad, but anyway. Good little tip of the cap to Wahoo for taking care of that. Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips. Okay, it's back to school time. So I decided that we need to talk about this. And there are people that ride their bikes to school and use their bikes as transportation, especially on the college campuses, because we do have a lot of off-campus housing. And there are buses that go back and forth to the off-campus housing, and they can always utilize that. It's so much better to do it with a bike because you don't have to worry about the schedule. You don't have to worry about, you know, where is the bus stop? What do I do? How do I go through? Just hop on your bike and ride. It's super, super easy. And the roads are getting a little bit more friendly around here as far as finding your way around. So it's not too bad. And so I decided that I would put together a little piece here. I've got a couple of articles that I pulled down. One is the top 10 tips for first-time bicycle commuters. If you've never done this before, it's, you know, there's a method to it. We'll call it a method. And the right and wrong way to lock your bike. These are lots of tips for this week as our UConn and Eastern students return. So let's go, first of all, to the top 10 tips. And we're really kind of in the show at this point because this is going to be lengthy. So once you've been bike commuting for a while, it's easy to forget how overwhelming it felt to hop on a bike and, you know, head into your city streets and for the first time. Safe cycling practices and comfort in the saddles, you know, they come to feel like second nature after a while. But if you haven't been on a bike for years, you know, maybe you've never even cycled on the road, it can be a little bit, nerve-wracking. If you've never done this before, you know, there's so much to look out for. You've got cars, you've got other people on bikes, you've got all these things that make it seem confusing, uncomfortable, and outright dangerous, but it really isn't. It isn't dangerous. And there are just a few ways to keep you safe on the road and as comfortable and convenient as possible. So we're going to go over a couple of things. First of all, if you haven't been on the bike for years, you really need to practice cycling. My recommendation is you take it to, we have some very large parking lots on campus. It's a great place to just ride around and get used to the feel of the bike, how it's going to handle for you, how the brakes work, that sort of thing, how to make turns. So that would be a good place to do it. If you're living off campus in one of the big complexes, we have a couple of fairly large apartment complexes off campus, you can also do that in either on the roads within the apartment complex, or even they have parking garages there too. You could even take it to the parking garage and you could find some spaces that are empty and open. Usually the roof is a good place to find that, because a lot of people don't like to park all the way up on top of the roof, and you could just ride around there and just get a feel for the bike. You really need to be comfortable on your bike. You really need to feel like you can safely stop, and when you do come to a stop, you want to be able to feel like you can put your feet down and balance yourself and not feel awkward on the bike. So practice, practice, practice. That's the first tip. Secondly, check your bike. Give your bike a good check over before you take it out on the road. Hopefully you have done that already. Hopefully maybe you went to your local bike shop. We have one right here in stores, and they can help you out with it if you need to get your bike ready for it. You know, there's some basic stuff, but the real basics is make sure you have enough air in your tires, or make sure you don't have too much air in your tires. Going to a gas station to put air in your tires is not recommended by any means. I strongly encourage you to either visit the bike shop or to get yourself a nice pump that will help you with your tires. Think about it. This is your vehicle, and a small investment in that vehicle will make a big, big difference in the long run. So give your bike a little check over. Make sure the chain is like got some lube on it. It's not squeaking or rusted or nasty in some way. I don't let my bikes get nasty. It doesn't settle well for me. So anyway, you want to just check your bike over, make sure everything works. Check the brakes, make sure the brakes work. If things are a little bit off, go see your local bike shop. They can help you out. Or maybe find that other person that you see commuting on their bike all the time and say, hey, could you give me a hand with this? I'm a little confused. And that brings me to my next point on here. Find someone to ride with. Finding a more experienced rider to tag along with can be a great way to beat those first ride jitters. So you can find a friend, a family member, a roommate, coworker, whatever, classmate, and you know, just have them just show you some of the tips that they've learned from riding the bike. Hopefully they're responsible tips and they don't, you know, do terrible things like blow through red lights and stop signs and all the things that make us as cyclists look really, really bad. You want to find someone who's actually responsible about riding their bicycle. So, and you got to plan ahead. There's no question about it. You got to take a look at the fact that you're going to have to spend X amount of minutes getting to where you need to go. And if you can do it on a day that you're not going riding your bike to class, but maybe on the weekend or something, and just time out stuff, time it out and see, you know, how long does it take me to get to the physics building? How long does it take me to get to the athletic building? How long does it take me? Wherever your classes are, just time it out and see, and make sure that that's considered when you hop on your bike to leave to get yourself to your classes or to move yourself around town. And let's see, that's the plan ahead. Then be space aware. You gotta be aware of the fact that you're not the only one out there. Even though you might feel like Superman or Superwoman because you're riding your bike and I'm getting this done all by myself and I've got all this great independence and all that, there's others out there that you gotta play with others, and you gotta learn how to play nicely with others. Cars, big one. Because cars are big and heavy, and people who drive cars tend to be extremely impatient at times. A lot of them are impatient because they're A, late for work, B, late for class. Yeah, for those who are driving in and commuting into campus. So you want to just pay attention to the car situation. The car situation is really hard, and it's going to take a very long time until we educate the drivers that we belong on the roads too, and that the only way you can do that is to ride responsibly. So I'm really, really pushing the responsible riding behavior here. And then you want to pay attention to the pedestrians. There's a lot of pedestrians. If you are riding your bicycle down the road and you approach a pedestrian crosswalk, do you continue to ride through the crosswalk or do you stop and let the pedestrian go through? The answer is you stop and let the pedestrian go through. You're a vehicle. You're a vehicle, and you could really hurt someone if you hit them at speed with your bike. And it doesn't take much speed to do that. So be aware of your space and spaces around you, other people on bicycles, other people that are either driving and or walking. Use alerts. Passing on the left is big. Never pass on the right. That's not a good idea. And use a bell. Bells are cool, by the way. I gotta tell you, I love my bells. I have bells on every bike that goes onto a rail trail or a multi-use trail. There may be pedestrians out there, horses out there, whatever. It is such a simple and inexpensive investment for your bike, and it gives people a warning ahead of time. I ring my bell about a quarter mile back. I start there, and I just ding, ding a couple times, and as I get a little bit closer, I go ding, ding. Eventually, if you're coming up behind someone, they'll turn and look back at you, and that's when you know they have heard you. You can stop ringing the bell now, please. But you'll get lots of compliments for it. I was out last week on the rail trail here, and I rang my bell for a couple of people. They were out walking their dogs, and they pulled off to the side and let me ride by, and I said hi to them, and they said, "Thank you so much for the bell. I love your bell." Yeah, see? Simple, 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 simple. Communication is key. You can also shout out and say, "Bicycle back," or whatever you want to do, but the bell seems to be the friendlier way of doing it. A little less aggressive with a bell. Follow the rules of the road. We don't even need to talk about that. That's fairly obvious. There are times when you could treat stop signs as an Idaho stop where you just slowly roll through, but if you do slowly roll through, please, please don't do it when there's an oncoming vehicle. It just sends a really bad message. So try your best to be courteous when you're out there. And the Idaho stop is also not legal in most states. It is in Idaho. I think California finally approved it too. So anyway, these are things you need to be aware of. And it's simply going very slowly to the right when you're making a right-hand turn. It's like right-hand turn on red or right-hand turn at stop with your motorized vehicle. Similar idea, except on the bike, you just slow roll it through. And use hand signals, man. Yeah. Point in the direction you are going, even if it's straight ahead. When I am riding my bike and I get to an intersection where I'm going straight, and let's say it's a traffic light, so I've come to a stop. First of all, I make sure that I am not blocking that right lane in any way if I'm going straight ahead. I get right out into the center lane or the lane that is indicated to go straight in, and I will actually point my finger straight forward and a little bit up in the air to the driver on the other side of the traffic light so that they know where I'm going when that light turns, instead of them looking at me and going, "Oh my God, it's a bike. What is he going to do? What is he going to do?" That's the thought. That's the mentality that happens there. So you really need to let people know where you're going, right, left, or straight ahead. And you can do that simply and probably best of all just by pointing in the direction of which you are going. There are other ways to make a right-hand turn, the old lift your hand up and put your palm straight up in the air and your hands going up. Everybody would just waves back at you. Nobody knows that signal anymore. That's an old-time signal. Just point. If you're making a right, point to the right. If you're making a left, point to the left. Going straight, point straight ahead. and maybe up a little bit so they can see you pointing straight ahead. The other thing about it is make sure you wear yourself a helmet, please. Put a helmet on. Put some lights on your bike. Flashing lights are wonderful. They make a huge difference. You get a lot more visibility. It shows that you're responsible when you're out riding. Responsible is really important because it's also safer. So there's a few tips for you. But most of all, at the very end of the day here, just have fun. You know, it's a fun way to travel back and forth. To commute on a bike is there's a real sense of accomplishment when you do that. It's really kind of nice. I enjoy it. I actually enjoy it. Anyway, that's what I've got for you for that tip. And now I've got another tip, the right and wrong way to lock your bike. Yeah, I see this all the time. People lock their bikes up and they end up coming back to the bike and finding the front wheel missing. And they'll find the seat and seat post missing. Maybe they'll find, you know, that bike thieves are the lowest form of human, and they are out there all the time, and they're always looking for opportunities. And your bicycle, especially if it's a nice new shiny one, is an opportunity for a bike thief. So it's really important that you buy the right lock and that you better yet, realize how to use it. And the key point here is that you have two wheels on the bike. They're both very easy to remove. And if you don't somehow lock both those wheels and the frame around a stationary object or a bike rack, you will find parts of your bike missing when you get there. So it's really important to make sure that you use a pretty heavy chain or a those U-locks are fairly effective. But if you use the U-lock and you only put it around the rear wheel and you don't put it around the frame of the bike or around a stationary object like a post or a bike rack, they're just going to pick the bike up and walk away with it. And they'll work on that later on when they have time. So don't be irresponsible with the locking of your bike. You got to really pay attention. Do it right. This is a big one. And I do not like lock your bike in a very inconspicuous place where very few people will see it, because that gives the bike thief an opportunity to spend a lot of time stealing your bike. Versus if it's right next to a whole bunch of other bikes, it's much harder for them to do it without being seen doing it, or even by maybe another cyclist who's coming to retrieve their bike from the rack or whatever. But don't hide it in the common one that I've seen on campus so many times is you go into these dorms and there's stairwells, and they, you know, park the bike underneath at the bottom of the stairwell so nobody knows it's there. And guess what? Somebody will know it's there. Somebody will figure it out. And they'll spend their sweet time figuring out how to crack your lock and get into the bike. If you are using one of those U-locks, I also highly recommend carrying a heavy cable with it. And I know it's a lot of weight to carry, but what's more important, having your bike there when you get done or, you know, carrying a little extra weight on your bike? So I incorporate the cable with the U-lock, and that goes through the front wheel of the bike as well as the U-lock going through the rear wheel of the bike, or vice versa, however you want to do it. But you want to make sure that both those wheels are secured in a way that you will have to have a key to unlock the bike in order to let it all go. So it takes you maybe an extra minute of time to carefully and responsibly lock up your bike, but your bike's always there when you get done. So be smart about it. That's, you know, can you afford to have a bike stolen? Probably not. So you got to make sure that you lock them up right. It's really, really important. Choosing the right bike lock, yeah. That's a tough one. There are very, very inexpensive cable style locks, but think about it. If it can be easily cut through with a set of bolt cutters, it's probably not the best lock for you if you want to see your bike there when you get done. I do use cable locks when I ride my bike, but I only use them in situations where my bike is not being locked for a long period of time. If I'm going to lock my bike for a long period of time, that's an entirely different animal, and that needs to be observed in a different way. And that's when you get into these really heavy U-locks. There's a number of anti-theft bike locks out there that are pretty darn good, big heavy chain type situations with like a cloth covering over them, which keeps you from scratching the bike. You can use something like that, but it's really up to you and what you can afford to buy to take care of your, of the security of your bike, or what you can afford to lose in having your bike stolen. So be careful about that. I find that if I'm in a situation like, let's point it out from a student situation where a student is riding their bike into class and they're going to be in class for, let's say, an hour. That's an hour's worth of time from the moment that bike was locked up to the moment that the person gets out that a bike thief could have time for to try to figure out a way to remove your lock. So make that lock difficult to remove. Not all locks are perfect, but there are some good ones out there that can really save you. You need advice on this? I send you right back to your local bike shop. Local bike shop will tell you exactly what they see and how they see it done. And, they've seen it all. Trust me. I was a rep in the bike business for a number of years, and I had a bike shop that I used to visit down in New Haven. And when I would walk in August, he would ask me, so what kind of deals do you have on, I'm looking for seat posts and I'm looking for front wheels and I'm looking for seats and I'm looking, and I went, what's this all about? And he goes, follow me. And I went downstairs and he had countless numbers of seat and seat posts lined up on the floor by size, all labeled out, and also front wheels with tires on them, some with tires on them, some without. But they were all just laid out there ready to go because he said they come here for an education. But he said, and the university gives them an education and they pay for that education. By the way, he was speaking of Yale, fairly famous college. And he said, but the people on the street, they really give them an education. So anyway, kind of a funny thing, that's a shout out. You know what? That's a shout out to a longtime listener of Bicycle Talk and old friend Joel LaChance, Cycles LaChance in New Haven, if you were ever in New Haven going to Yale University. And anyway, I just always found it amusing when I go in there and he'd be looking for quantities of these things because he knew he was going to go through them like water, and he was very efficient with it. So your standard U-lock is pretty darn good. There are some folding locks out there that work really well too. They were invented by a company by the name of Abus, A-B-U-S, and now there's other brands of that out there. They seem to work really well. Frame locks have been around a really long time in the Scandinavian countries. They simply have a loop that goes down and through the rear wheel. And I have one of those, and I have it on one of my commuter style bikes. And mine also came with a 6-foot cable. So I can use that and incorporate that into locking the front wheel as well as the rear wheel. And that lock is actually bolted onto the bike. So it's not going anywhere, and you always know you have it with you. So there's ways of doing it, and you just have to kind of look and see what's out there if you're looking to lock your bike up. But do not leave your bike alone for very long because someone will grab it. It's your nice bicycle is an opportunity for someone else. So make sure that you're very, very careful about that. Do not lock your bike over the top of onto a parking meter, because they'll just lift the whole thing up and off the meter and the bike will be gone. So don't do that. Chain link fence, better idea. Bike rack, pretty good idea. I don't like the new bike racks that are out there right now, but that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. Lots of people are, you know, happy with that design, those big U-shaped designs. I'm not particularly happy with those. I like a fence better because I know that they're never going to pull that fence out of the ground, and you can, you know, lock it in multiple places with a fence, but that's all up to you and what you want to do. So you're also going to find that there's a number of, we have these, they're like posts in the ground, and then there's a chain that links over to the next post in the ground. And they're very decorative and very nice. Great place to lock your bike, except there are rules. And oftentimes you'll find that the locals do not like you to do that because it doesn't make their fence very pretty anymore. Don't even get me started. It's not a bike culture. That's all I can tell you. We're if we were all smart enough to do it right, we would allow things like that, and we would make it even more accessible by maybe even adding a second and lower chain so that it would be super easy to attach your bike to. But anyway, that's what it is. That's what we have to deal with. So we do. So, how to lock your bike up, you know, it's all a matter of finding. I like to find a stationary object that I know will not ever go anywhere. A telephone pole, not many people are going to be able to cut down a telephone pole to remove your bike from the pole. So that's a pretty solid place to do it. Make sure that you support the bike enough so that it's not going to fall over once it's locked onto it. So there are some things that you do have to be careful with, and be sure that both your wheels are secured. Super important. Bottom line, if you cannot find a place to lock your bike, let's say you're going into a merchant or whatever, always ask. You know, I've gone to the grocery store countless number of times and said, do you mind if I just roll my bike through? I just need to pick a couple things up, and I don't want to leave my bike outside unattended. I didn't bring my lock with me today. 9 times out of 10, they'll say, yeah, go ahead. No big deal. And, you know, when you're commuting with your bike or shopping with your bike and you have a nice little grocery bag pannier on the back, that's, you know, it's kind of obvious what you're doing with it. It's really pretty simple. But not all merchants are made the same and are that flexible. So, you know, be careful of that. If you're going into, let's say, a coffee shop or something like that, and you can lean your bike against the front window of the store, or put it in a place where you can see it the entire time, that's always a good call, you know, but you got to keep your eyes on it all the time. So I've done that too, where I've just parked my bike outside, and I, because oftentimes I do not bring a lock with me if I'm on my road bike, but I will oftentimes stop at a cafe to grab a coffee or something. And so I'll lean the bike up against something outside that is very visible to the window. And when I get what I'm looking for, I make sure I'm sitting in a chair that's looking straight out at my bicycle. So you just got to be smart about it. It's kind of common sense, but that's really the best way to do it. And choose that parking space wisely, of course. I mentioned that earlier. No under the stairwell parking of your bike, not a good idea. Even parking your bike in the basement of a dorm is not lovely unless they have a better security system than I have seen in the past. Some dorms will have better security systems, and so your bike is safe down there. But the longer you leave your bike to a point where your eyes are not on it, the more opportunity someone has to make it their bike. So please be careful about that. And so you're locking to sturdy, safe objects, and there you go. That's it. That's what I got for you for locking your bike. Just lock your bike carefully. Think about it. Think about how easy it would be to steal the bike. And think like a thief. And then maybe you'll lock your bike a little bit better. So that's my tips. My tips ran way over into the show because it's back to school time here. It's college campus time right here, right now. We have a lot of bicycle activity going on around us right now. So I just wanted to make sure I covered these items as I do most falls as folks are getting back to school. So, you know, your bike is a special thing. You really want to, you want to take care of it. So let's move on. I got some other things to talk about here in the show. One of them being, let's see here, bum, 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 bum. So earlier in the show, I had mentioned that Visa Melissa Bike had a little problem with some bike theft, right? So as we're on the subject of bike theft, I'll go into this a little deeper. And so it was a big shock this morning when we woke up, says Visma CEO Richard Plouge. After up to 18, remember I said a few bikes were stolen? Yeah, just a handful or a small amount. 18 bikes were stolen from the mechanics truck belonging to Visma Lisa Bike overnight. And Richard Plouge revealed that the Dutch squad will start stage three, that's today's stage, of the Vuelta a España with a full set of equipment. Must be nice to have money, huh? They got back up there somewhere. I'm sure they called the sponsor, the bike sponsor, and said, we have an emergency. What can you do? And they probably rallied their socks off and got them all set up because they do want them riding on their bikes. That's a very important part. So the Lisa Bikes mechanics worked all morning to secure and build equipment they needed to start the third stage. Boy, to be a bike mechanic in that situation, oh my God, you're under tons of pressure. You're trying to put all these team bikes together. They have to be perfect because, you know, this is the equipment that the riders are using. It's super important that everything works really, really well. Oh boy, I can't even imagine. I'm sure they worked through the night. I've known professional mechanics over the years, and it's a very exciting and not a very rewarding job because you're just working your butt off trying to keep these bikes functioning properly. For most of the riders are really good, but you do get a handful of prima donnas out there that are a little fussy about things, and it's a hard job. Let me just say, it's a hard job. You get really good at doing things really well and fast at the same time. So it's a real talent that the professional bicycle mechanic has to be able to handle situations like this. So that's just a terrible thing to have all those bikes stolen. I mean, many tens of thousands of dollars of bicycles. 18 bikes. Let's do some math here. 18 bikes, okay. Let's say, I mean, they're not riding anything under 10 grand. So I'll let you figure it out. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money to lose. And the other big thing about it is every single one of those bikes, it has been custom fitted to the cyclist that it's going to be under. And you know, all those adjustments have to be made. I'm sure they have them all written down somewhere so that it's easy enough for them to do. But it's just a matter of, you can't just put the bike together, throw it out there and say, you do the seat post adjustment. No, they have that information. So it's a tough thing. I mean, they always want to have, extra bikes available too, because if someone crashes a bike or they get a flat tire or whatever, they want to be able to make that bike exchange super, super quick. So that's why they need all these bicycles. And even though they only have, let's say, well, you know, on a team, maybe you'll have 6 or 8 riders on a team and that's it. You're still 18 bicycles. It's pretty much your fleet of backup bikes and ready to go bikes too. So that's a problem. Okay, moving on a little bit more in the Vuelta. Today, I do not have a report yet for today. I will have that next week. But it is a medium mountain stage, and it's 134.6 kilometers, and it's probably over with now as I'm looking at my Eastern East Coast clock time and comparing it to what it would be in Spain right now. But or if it's not over, it's very, very close to being over. But anyway, it's got some, I think it has some roles in it. I think it had some, let's see if I can get a profile here real quick. Oh, come on, where's my profile? Yeah, it's got a couple of little, it's got a category 2 in it. It's got category 4, which is, it's a long uphill finish, but it's only category 4, so it's not that difficult. It's just annoying at the end, I think, is what it is. There's a little steep grade at the very, very end. So it's more of a rolly stage, I would say, than anything else. That was today. Yesterday had a little bit more of a steepness to the climb. The finish was spectacular. It was Jonas Vingegaard was sitting on Sepp Kuss's wheel, basically. Sepp charged real hard to try to keep the pace up to get him positioned, and Jonas threw his bike across the line and probably won by about a half of a tire width. I mean, it was the most impressive photo finish I've ever seen. And it was racing against an Italian sprint champion, and you know, here's where mistakes are made. And I talk about this when I train young riders who are learning to race, and I used to also help out my ex-wife with track and field runners and cross country runners. There's a big bad rule, and it's not a bad rule, it's a good rule. But there's one thing that we all have a tendency to do when we're in a situation where we're really close to a finish line and we want to just check on our competition. So we inadvertently turn over our shoulder and we look behind us. That is one of the most criminal acts you could possibly do in a race situation, because what it does is it indicates to those that are behind you that you may be in trouble, number one. Whether you are or not, doesn't matter, but you may be, because you're so concerned that you feel like you have to turn around and look. And that is the message that is set. Plus, it also gives the riders and or runners or whatever that are behind you an opportunity to jump on the side that you are not looking at. And so it, to me, is like the worst offense you can commit, because you're gonna pay a price for it. You're just gonna pay a big ugly price for it. So anyway, I always tell people, please do not ever look behind and see where you are. It's not a good idea, especially if you're in a big bunch of riders, because it's someone's going to take that as an opportunity. So opportunities, kind of like bike thefts, right? Yeah. So anyway, that's what happened. And Jonas came around him, and it was a spectacular finish. It was a lot of fun to watch. So we're looking at Jonas to possibly be the red jersey winner this year. He's got a good team behind him. Tadej Pogačar is not there. He should be home resting by now, because he has had one heck of an early season. He will not be in this race, but there are other riders that are very strong that are in this race. So it's not a done deal by any means, but Jonas is certainly a very, very strong rider. And when they get into the mountains, he's going to be doing some serious damage. But there's, again, some great young riders that are coming along. This bike racing thing has really turned into, there's a lot of excitement with some of the new riders, some of the young riders that are coming into the sport. So we'll see. It's a bike race. You never know. Anything can happen. So I'm looking forward to that. We've got, I think there's nine stages before the first rest day. The first rest day is next Monday, and they will get a break then. This race did start in Italy and then goes into Spain, obviously finishes in Spain, in Madrid. So that's kind of the direction that everything is going. But there are going to be, let's see here, Media Mountains is yesterday. Today is Media Mountains. Tomorrow is Media Mountains. Also, 207 kilometers, pretty long. Stage 5, which is on Wednesday, is a team time trial. If you've never seen a team time trial, this is a fun thing to watch because this shows you the efficiency of being able to really hold a wheel and work tight together as a team. And it is an impressively, it's like a spectacular thing to watch when you see this. It is also extremely difficult to do if you've ever done it before or if you've ever been in a situation where you're riding really tight with someone trying to keep up a really high speed. It's very challenging. Add to it that they will probably be on ridiculous bikes, or what I like to call ridiculous bikes, which are time trial bikes. I find time trial bikes to be just dangerous, treacherous thing, machines to ride. They're just no fun at all. They don't handle that well. And they're going to be on those bikes, and they're going to be down in drops, and they're going to be using aero bars, and they're going to be, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. It's a recipe for disaster. That's all I can say. Hopefully it won't rain, because rain will change everything. The way it works with the team time trial, I'm not sure exactly. Maybe it might be the top 6 of 8 have to finish together, or it's going to be that top six, that sixth man's time that they use for the time trial. So if they get dropped, then they kind of get a little screwed on that. So it's really, really important to keep your team together as long as you can. The strategy usually is to send out a couple of your really, really strong riders at the start to take hard, hard pulls in the beginning of the time trial to get everybody up to pace and up to speed, and then they will eventually drop off, and they'll just be kind of like the pacer vehicle, so to speak, and then they will drop off, and once they drop off, then the rest of them are in for the duration. So this is a 24.1 kilometer time trial. So, you know, fairly long. It should be interesting to watch. I like watching team time trials a lot better than I like watching time trials, because watching time trials is kind of like ho-hum in my world. I don't find it that exciting. It is interesting to watch the control that the riders have going through the corners and the skills that they have in doing it. And you take a look at the world championship time trialists, and they can read a tangent and hold a position on their bike, which is that would be intolerable to me because of how hard it is to hold that position. They have to have really solid core strength, lots of flexibility to be able to hold that really downward aerodynamic position. It's pretty fascinating, really. But anyway, that's team time trial on the 5th, on Wednesday, the 5th stage on Wednesday. Thursday, they're into the mountains. Friday, they're into the mountains. Next Saturday, they go back to a flat stage, so it'll be a sprinter's ride. With, you know, probably lots of team tactics and big fast sprints at the end. On Sunday, it says hilly uphill arrival, 195 kilometers. And that's just before their rest day. That's stage 9. And it looks like, because I can pull all this stuff up and take a look. Yeah, it's very similar to the race yesterday, actually. Not a lot different, but it is a Category 1 climb at the very end, so it's got some quality. It appears that the very last section here, let's see, from 187 kilometers on, appears to be very, very steep. So we'll see. The challenge of the Vuelta a España has typically been that it's usually really, really hot there, and there's not a whole lot of shade there, so it can really have an effect on the riders as far as dehydration goes. So it's critical that they drink lots and lots of water and lots of electrolytes to be able to keep themselves going. That is, it's funny because The first of the series is the Giro d'Italia, and the challenge there is staying warm enough. The challenge here is staying cool enough, because when you start the Giro, they start the Giro in sometimes April and May, and there's still snow on top of the mountains, and you know they're carving themselves through these huge walls of snow that have been pushed off to the side. It can get a little cooler and trickier there, and there's also still rain season going on. It's very, very much temperature challenged, both the Giro and also the Vuelta. So anyway, that's what we got. How we doing? Hey, we're running out of time, so we got to move our way towards the end of the show. That brings me to events. And before you know it, we'll be watching the Vuelta. Well, we are watching the Vuelta. How about that? And I know it's August, yet here we go. Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series is getting very close to starting. Our first race is the Belltown Throwdown, which is on the 6th of September. So really soon. Following is Hidden Valley, which is the 21st of September. And Belltown does their second race on the 27th of September, followed by Newtown on the 5th, and Damned at the Dam, that's our race right here in Mansfield, on the 11th. Moran Cross moves on to November on the 16th, and Orchard Scorcher on the 30th in November. So that's the Project Mayhem series. There's also a River Valley Cross series in Massachusetts. It basically is a number of races up in Massachusetts and very, very popular also. And soon, very, very soon, really important here, starting this Wednesday, yeah, it's here, the CCAP Rocky Hill Cyclocross Series. What it is it's a training race on Wednesday nights. It's at the dog park in Rocky Hill if you're looking for it. And it's where you get your rusty old cross legs out and go out and warm them up on the course and see what you can do. And if you're around before or after the race and have a little extra time, they always need help setting up the course. So that's a nice thing to do if you have the wherewithal to do that sort of thing. I'm going to try to get out there for a couple of those races because I'm using it as promotion for my race. And I usually do a QR code and I let people just scan it and then they'll get into the bike reg. But all these races are on bike reg. So if you're looking for the race, that's the way to do it. Sunday, September 21st is the 9th annual Southbridge Credit Union Tour Opakum. And that's a bike ride for land conservation. And our friends just up over the border up in Massachusetts. Pretty area too, where they do it. So finishing points, it's the Vuelta, more bicycle racing at our fingertips. So I find it to be a very challenging race because of the heat. If you're going back to school, remember, you're going to use your bike. You got to make sure you lock it up real good. You got to make sure that you're responsible when you're riding it. Try to stay off the sidewalks, please. And if you do need to use the sidewalks, please, 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 pedestrian speed only. Think of others, not just yourself. So, from our friends at League of American Bicycles, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. The League is making bicycle riding safer and easier option for more people, because more people bike, the happier they are, the healthier they are, and our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. This is like no-nonsense stuff here. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas and the lack of places to safely ride your bike. Do your part. Show up to a town meeting. Make a stink. Go for it. Make some noise. Let people know that bicycle people matter too. Take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Park your car one day. Maybe your truck too, whatever you are driving around in, and use your bike instead. See if you can do it. I'll bet you can. I'll bet you can. I'm throwing that out there for you. So hopefully that'll be it. Funny, Pete just sent me over a text. I've been watching my screen real closely, and he said, that he goes to a bakery and they let them bring their bikes into the bakery. Bravo. Support that bakery. That's a good thing. Excellent, excellent. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with me, Pedalin' Ron. We hope to see you next week. Keep that rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. Take care. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Get on your bikes and ride!